Blog Talk Radio.
Well, Andrew Socek, we may have to give condolences because, according to how Impact Wrestling just went off the air, Rosemary's dead. So rest in peace, I guess.
I guess it was a good run.
Yeah, it was. But we need to offer our condolences to her friends and family, Allie especially, who had to watch the poor girl die. That is how Impact finished tonight. It's Thursday. Thursday, May 3rd, 2018. I'm Mike McMahon with Andrew Socek, and this is the PW Torch Post-Impact Thursday live cast. What did you think of that main event segment? It was supposed to be a main event match. They never actually had a match. Mm-hmm. Su Yung attacks Rosemary before the bell. They have her undead bridesmaids bring a coffin to the ring. And after some fighting, and Allie comes out, and the bridesmaids subdue her, it ends with a panic switch off the stage through a table, and then the undead bridesmaids placing Rosemary in a coffin, and the announcers speculating whether or not she had died. That is actually what happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be tough to get through tonight's episode after witnessing that. But we're professionals, so, you know, we'll get past her death. What did I think? I think it went on too long. That's kind of my biggest take. I don't mind supernatural kind of stuff in wrestling, but I don't know. Just to like nitpick it, like Rosemary was on the ground a long time, like waiting to get back up. I don't know, just the way they walked back and forth from up and down the ramp. But on the other end, I am glad they're holding off on this as a big one-on-one match. So yeah, kind of mixed feelings. What do you think about it?
I thought it went on. I thought it went on a little too long too. And I also thought it was a little, I thought it was premeditated a little bit, just in the sense that I think they came back for that final segment at about 9:52, at least on my clock. Yeah. So there's about 8 minutes left in the show. So you figure, okay, well, you're not obviously going to get a match in 8 minutes. Not a match like this that you think they'd build up with some type of hype around it. So I thought in that sense they kind of showed their hand a little bit because you knew something was going to happen. I mean, the angle itself I thought was interesting. You know, I'm not a big fan of them wondering whether or not she's actually dead. You know, I was kind of nitpicking and you know, give them a little grief there. But yeah, I thought the segment overall was good. I mean, they're telling a pretty good story here. It just makes sense that they're going to match up at some point. I mean, you've got two somewhat similar characters in Rosemary and Su Yung. It's a natural rivalry. So I'm not surprised that we're going to see them go out and utilize that and go after it right away. I mean, they're not going to waste any time with it. But I think that makes sense.
I mean, I guess ideally for me, I would wait until Slammiversary to have these two wrestle, but there's no way that that's going to happen at this point. I'm not overly thrilled either with Allie being so heavily involved in the feud now. I know her and Rosemary have been in backstage segments before, but I don't think they've ever just flat out said they're best friends. I know like maybe like on Twitter they have, but unless I've missed it, they haven't been that closely connected, have they?
Not that I can recall. Like I said, there's been some segments here and there, but nothing to the extent of, you know, you'd think she would be watching her best friend.
Yeah.
You know, the type of reaction she had. Yeah, I don't recall anything like that to that extent for sure. What did you think of them putting this in the final segment? I mean, I kind of felt like they didn't really have much of a choice. You're going to do something like this, it's hard to not end the show with it. Did you have any issue with how they formatted the show in terms of putting this last? Or
no, I don't think so. There wasn't anything else on the show that was really big enough to go in that spot. And I think, you know, if you're going to do a big angle like that, it's a nice hook for next week, minus the dying part, because I don't think anybody's actually going to buy into that. But no, I'm fine with that. I think it's nice to mix it up now and then. And it's cool to see the Knockouts get the main event match. It is happening more and more these days, but it's still, you know, pretty rare, I guess.
Yeah, especially with this company. I mean, we've seen them do it before, but I don't feel like they've done it much since, you know, that Kongo Kong era, especially with Kongo Kong and Gail Kim. I mean, they did it a lot then, which was good. Because Awesome Kong, yeah. What did I say?
Kongo Kong.
Kongo Kong. Oh, man, too many Kongs. Awesome Kong. I want to say, where did she go by in WWE? There wasn't any Kong in there.
It was Karma in WWE and Karma. Amazing Kong in Ring of Honor, I believe.
Okay, so that's where I get Awesome Kong and Amazing Kong. I can never remember which name she used where. But back, you know, in probably 2006, 2007, when her and Gail Kim were kind of the featured players in the division, they would main event Impact with women's matches a lot, or women's segments a lot. I don't know if the division has been strong enough since then to really do it. I mean, we've seen them do it. I don't think it necessarily is warranted. I think sometimes they've tried to shoehorn it in a little bit, especially in the last couple of years with WWE building up their women's division. I think Impact has felt the need to catch up, or not catch up, but seem like they're doing the same thing, when in reality their division just wasn't nearly as strong or nearly as deep as WWE's. But when you have two pretty strong characters like this, I think you can do it with these two characters. I'm not sure you can do it with any of the other characters in the show right now in the Knockouts division. I mean, maybe I think you could do it with Taya Valkyrie, although they're really cooling her off, and we'll talk about that too.
Yeah.
But they're cooling her off big time. I think she's a big enough name and feels like a big enough star that you could put her in a main event type feature, but they need to also build her back up, because like I said, you know, they've cooled her off considerably. The two strongest characters in the division are probably Su Yung and Rosemary right now. And I don't think that I didn't bat an eye at them getting the main event segment. I didn't think that there was anything wrong with it. I thought that it fit really when you consider what else they put on the show too. It's not like they had a world title match, you know, go on at 9 o'clock or anything like that. You could maybe make the argument that the X Division match should have gone last, but with the way the finish came, and it wasn't like it was a super crazy match, I would say, you know, there was no problem there. Honestly, if you go by match quality, the six-man probably should have ended the show. But considering the story they were trying to tell here, I don't think there was any issue with them putting them last. Do you?
No, not at all. I mean, you could say the X Division match, and I would say that, but Ishimori, he's cooled down a lot too. I mean, the guy never wins anymore, which makes me wonder, how did he get in that match in the first place? Because he hasn't won, I want to say, in months. So yeah, there was no doubt in my mind that he was definitely not winning that one. And yeah, Rosemary and Su Yung are the two most intriguing characters. Allie is not much of a main event act, it feels to me. And yeah, I agree on Taya, which is really unfortunate that she was such a afterthought on tonight's show. And I don't get what they're doing with that at all.
515-605-9345 is the number here on the live cast. Again, 515-605-9345. When you're on hold, you just got to make sure you hit the number 1. That's going to let us know that you want to get in the caller queue and get on the show. If you just call that number and don't hit the number 1, you're going to listen to the show, but we're not going to see that you want to get on the air. So when you dial 515-605-9345, make sure you hit the number 1, and that's going to tell us that you want to get on the air. Andrew, we hinted at it a little bit, but yeah, Taya Valkyrie, really, I mean, for whatever reason, it feels like they're cooling both of her and Johnny Impact down at the same time, which I don't know if there's things we need to look into with that. You know, I'm not sure if there's something to read into here, if there's a contract situation going on or something, but you look at the fact that they're kind of de-emphasizing Taya Valkyrie in the Knockouts division at the same time that they're de-emphasizing Johnny Impact, at least as far as a main event push goes. He's obviously in the middle of a storyline with Kongo Kong, although they haven't visited that now in a couple of weeks. Do you think there's anything to read into there? I think, you know, I think where there's smoke, there's fire a lot of times, and I don't want to be one of these guys that just starts rumors. I mean, that's what a lot of people in wrestling media get a bad rep for, just recklessly starting rumors. But it is kind of weird that the husband and wife duo are both seemingly being de-emphasized at the same time.
Yeah, I actually do think there probably is something behind it. I don't know. I haven't talked to anyone there about it, but it reminds me of what happened to Sienna. When she came back from injury, she lost to Allie in about 3-4 minutes, and then she has completely disappeared since. Taya, I mean, she main evented the show not too long ago with Rosemary, and as soon as that program ended, she has basically become a jobber, because after she was knocked out of the match tonight, they didn't mention her a single time. So it seems to me that they have completely moved on from her at this point in time. And if she were to stick around, it seems to me you would want to have her be positioned stronger, since there are so few women on the roster anyway. I mean, there's got to be less than 10. So to take somebody that was in your top two or three and then just push them all the way to the end of the line, to me says something is going on.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think so too. It can't be a coincidence. If they were doing it with one, maybe, right? But I don't think it's a coincidence that you've got a husband and wife who I would assume are on the same type of deal or on the same length of deal. If there's any deal at all, it could be pay per appearance. I mean, we don't really know. But yeah, to see them both kind of being not phased out, but definitely having their pushes scaled back, I think that there's probably something to that. I mean, if you were to ask me my opinion, I'd say, yeah, there's got to be something to it. It'd be too much of a coincidence for there not to be. But yeah, I mean, I guess I wanted to see Johnny Impact get more of a feature if he was featured more as a heel. And you and I have both talked about that. But, you know, I kind of think that the both of them together as a heel couple, you know, I don't want to compare them to like Miz and Maryse, but that's the first thing that comes to mind. Although I think they're both, Taya is a better wrestler than Maryse, and I think that Impact is a better wrestler than the Miz. Miz is obviously a better talker than Impact. But yeah, I mean, if you were to position them together as a heel pairing, I think that could work. But I don't know if we're ever going to get to that. You know, the thing that's weird with Johnny Impact is I'm starting to look back at that angle and what they did at the end of that show right before Redemption when Kongo Kong beat up Johnny Impact and I think left him bleeding, if I remember correctly. It almost feels like, you know, was that a way to write him off television? And instead of doing a match at some point, was that a way to just get rid of him? Because he wasn't on the pay-per-view, and he's barely been mentioned since, with the exception of Jimmy Jacobs in a promo tonight bringing up that Moose wants to call himself Mr. Impact, and the last time that happened, you know, Kongo Kong basically eliminated the guy.
I had that same thought as well. I mean, it seems to me like they would make up a bigger idea of when he would come back, and the announcers would talk about it and how his face has been destroyed and how he's doing in his recovery or something. But no, there's nothing there. And yeah, if somebody else is calling themselves Mr. Impact, that could be bad things for Johnny at the moment. But yeah, I'm with you. I think those two together, Ty Valkyrie and Johnny Impact, that's a main event act to me, which they desperately need more of, especially if Eli Drake may be out the door in another month or so. So, I hope he comes back and they pair him up, but right now it's not looking so good.
And then before we go to our first break, let's kind of talk about that world title picture. Eli Drake started the show with a promo announcing that he was going to challenge and cash in his Feast or Fired world title opportunity, and he's going to face Pentagon next week for the world title. I thought that the segment at the beginning of the show was not great. I thought it was okay. They at least announced it and advertised the match ahead of time, which I liked. But I wrote in my report at the time on PWTorch.com that I felt like they needed to go back and probably run some angle to set that match up even more later on in the show. And that never happened. What did you think of, first of all, the pairing, the fact that they're going to go with Pentagon and Eli Drake, and then also the angle that they ran to set the match up? What did you think of that opening segment on the show?
Yeah, I was pretty lukewarm on it as well. I think Pentagon Jr. is like, his momentum is, I don't want to say it's gone by any means, but it's definitely down from what it was after his title win, which was a pretty buzzworthy moment for the company. But yeah, another thing that kind of was just odd to me was that Scott Steiner wasn't there, where, you know, at the end of last week's show, they made a kind of a deal out of him and Eli Drake appearing to, you know, build towards a split or something. So it's, I mean,
two
I don't
days
mind.
After they got together.
Yeah. So it's just hard to get invested in some things when they have this kind of booking approach and people show up, they disappear. I don't mind it. You know, it helps some wrestlers feel fresher, but you kind of got to pick your spots when you do that. And I think that would maybe add a little bit more tonight. And just, yes, definitely go back to those two at some point. I mean, they had that really cool promo from Pentagon at the pay-per-view, and they haven't done that since. So I I still think for a majority of fans out there, they don't know yet why he would be special, because Impact isn't really showing us why.
I'm going to butcher his last name, and I apologize because I know he listens. But Frank, I'm going to say Patani. I know he's a listener. He mentioned something on Twitter during the show tonight, which I found interesting. He says, you know, he's a rookie Impact fan. He's only started watching Impact recently after he's been listening to us talk about it. And he asked me, and I haven't answered him yet on Twitter, but I wanted to talk about it here. He says, is it possible that Eli Drake is being groomed to go babyface when Scott Steiner turns on him? He said, you guys would know better than me, but Eli strikes me as the type of guy that will instantly be liked as much as he's booed. It did kind of feel that way tonight, did it not? I mean, the way that Drake set up the match, he didn't cash in on a guy that was beaten down. You know, he set the match up ahead of time, which is what a babyface would do. And he had an interaction backstage with Austin Aries, who's clearly going heel. Do you think that this is leading to an Eli Drake babyface turn? Because it does kind of seem that way.
I really hadn't thought about that too much, but yeah, I think that makes some sense. I think, though, the big thing is whether he sticks around with the company. He said his contract is up in May, so he may be done. I haven't looked at any spoilers, so I don't know what happens, but yeah, I mean, I think if he does stick around, they probably will turn him face before too long, just because they probably could use some more people in the role. And I think he's probably somebody who would have some success in that spot. But
he can talk himself into really against anybody.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I would say it's probably going to happen soon if he does stay with the company.
All right, well, let's go to our first break. Again, the phone number is 515-605-9345. We've already got some callers lined up. 515-605-9345. Make sure you hit the number 1. We're going to take a quick 30-second break. When we get back, we'll go to the phone calls here on the PW Torch Livecast.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harlow talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as the perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. Someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn, go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast, we're going to go to the phones, and two of our regular callers are 1 and 2 in the queue here, and Ryan in Maryland has beaten Kylan in New Jersey by 4 seconds.
Wow. It
shows me how long they've been on hold. So Ryan is caller number 1 by 4 seconds. Ryan, how are you tonight, and what's on your mind?
Okay, I'm doing well. First question for you is on the Undead Brides. Do you know what their identity is? Are they professional wrestlers, or are they just actors, or are they just people they picked out of the crowd?
I don't know, Andrew. I'm not sure if you do, but I believe they're wrestlers. I mean, it looked like some of them had some type of gear on underneath those dresses, so I would imagine they're wrestlers. Whether they're just local indie wrestlers or what, I'm not sure. Andrew, have you read anything that indicated the identity of those undead bridesmaids?
I have not. No, that was my guess as well, that they were probably local indie wrestlers. I don't think they're probably anybody overly well-known because they haven't featured any of them in a meaningful role. They're all just kind of interchangeable at the moment. Though I could maybe see them being models because they all look pretty attractive to me. So I don't know if they were just brought in for a pretty face, I guess, for the role.
My second question for you is, do you think there's going to be a casket match? And have there ever been a female casket match before?
That's an excellent question. I do. I think that is what they're going to lead to, is some type of – they kept calling it a coffin tonight instead of a casket, so maybe they're going to call it a coffin match because they don't want to completely rip off a WWE idea. But, yeah, I think that that's probably where this is going. Andrew, what do you think? Do you think that they're going to lead towards a casket match? And can you think of any women's casket matches? Because I can't.
Yes, I think this is definitely headed towards that. That's probably why they brought the casket match out a couple times. I just Googled this quick, or actually, I guess I did it on Bing. I don't know why, but Rhea Von Slasher versus Crystal Bubbles is the only one that pops up for a women's casket match. So I don't believe WWE ever has, or is WCW for sure. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I think for them, though, that's a pretty cool thing to be able to promote.
Yeah, there may have been some on some indie shows and stuff. I mean, I just Googled it here, and there's a YouTube video that pops up of one from 2011, it looks like, from New Era Wrestling. So I'm sure, you know, it may have happened on an independent level, but as far as widely broadcast on television or pay-per-view or anything like that, I certainly can't think of one. So, yeah, I don't think there has been, Ryan.
Another question I have for you is, I attended Jerry Jarrett's new production, which is sort of like American Idol, that they take different wrestlers on to experience and critique them with Jim Cornette and Colonel Parker and Barbara Bush. Do you think it's possible that some of the Impact wrestlers might be on this show, considering that Jerry Jarrett has a history with Impact wrestling?
Right now he doesn't have much of a relationship with him at all. So I wouldn't think any current Impact talent, but I mean, this maybe you could see some guys that he had a relationship from when he brought them in back around 2002, 2003, whenever it was that he was really in control. I haven't seen that show though either, Andrew. Have you?
No, I had not heard of this at all. Barbara Bush, is that BB and WWF like 15 years ago? Wow. I think if anybody does show up, it wouldn't be through Impact itself, because Jared has been out so long. Him and his son kind of famously didn't get along for a few years, and Jerry didn't like the vision with the company. He got kind of booted from Power, and he showed up in WWE with Vladimir Kozlov of all people to try to get him signed. So yeah, he hasn't I think shown up there in years. From what I can remember, unless he showed up for like a Slammiversary appearance or something. I think if they show up, it's going to be through their own independent contractor status.
I haven't seen the show though, Ryan. What exactly is it? Is it they're just watching them wrestle matches and critiquing them, or?
Jim Cornette has this blow horn that he can blow like 2 minutes in the match if he thinks the match is really bad. Then the match like completely ends, and then they get critiqued. But sometimes, you know, Jim Cornette likes the match. They get to finish the match if he thinks it's, you know, respectable. So a lot of times, you know, he'll play for him before the match can even end.
Oh, interesting.
Where is it airing? Is it airing online or is it actually on a network?
I went to the show in Wheeling, West Virginia, the casino. I don't know if it's actually aired yet. I think they're just trying to get a national TV deal for it.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess it's possible. I mean, they're all still independent contractors. I don't know of any person on the roster that's really locked into a contract. I mean, there might be a few that are locked into contract, but I know a lot of the guys on the show are 100% free agents. So I guess it's possible. I wouldn't say that it's likely that he has much of a relationship with the company, though.
Yes. I can tell you Sam Adonis is their top star, and he's the one that Jim Cornette really loves. The bunch of wrestlers that Jared has.
Interesting. I'll have to look that up.
And do you have any idea what Pentagon said that got them censored tonight?
That's a really interesting question. I have no idea. I wonder if they – I mean, it could have been that they just didn't need to censor it at all and just wanted to make them sound cool. I don't know. But, yeah, no, I have no clue. Andrew, do you?
I don't think so. He was speaking in Spanish at the moment, I believe. So, yeah, I must have – I'm guessing it was a Spanish swear word, but I only took 2 years of it, and that was a long time ago. So, I don't know.
I haven't taken any Spanish since high school, and
yeah,
I wasn't very good at it then. Anything else in your mind, Ryan?
My final question I have for you is that ring that Brian Cage wrestled in that was like real slippery that they were talking about, has that ever been used before? Like it's sort of like that, like the black slick canvas, because I've never seen one of those rings before.
Yeah, I've seen it at some indie shows. I'm in the Boston area. I know there's a couple of promotions up here in the area in New England that I've seen use that slippery looking canvas. It's almost kind of looks like it's a gymnastics mat of some kind. So it's not a canvas really at all. It's literally like a vinyl mat. I've seen it on some indie shows here. I've never seen it on a show that has any wide distribution that I can recall. I've got in my head that, you know, either ECW or WCW used a ring like that maybe one or two times and then pretty quickly phased it out, but I could be mixing memories with when Nitro used to have that giant Nitro logo in the middle of the ring that I know a lot of guys complained about being slippery. So I don't know if that's what I'm thinking of and just not recalling the right memory. But yeah, I've seen it on some indie level shows in this area, but nothing that I can think of that was widely distributed. Andrew, have you ever seen it? I mean, I definitely have seen it before, but do you know of any bigger promotions that have ever used that type of ring?
So I missed part of the question. Is it a black canvas? Is that what it was?
Not just the black canvas, but even Don Callis had mentioned it in commentary that it was almost like a slick material. It wasn't like a canvas material. NXT uses the black canvas, but you can tell it's a canvas material. This almost looked like it was like some type of vinyl mat, like a gymnastics mat of some kind that he had brought up how slippery it could be.
Yeah, not that I can think of. I can picture a few different promotions using black, but yeah, not of that substance or whatever.
Yeah, that material.
Yeah, that material. That's the word I'm looking for. There we go.
Thanks for taking my call tonight.
Thanks for the call, Ryan. All right, so Ryan was up first, and like I said, he beat Kylan by 4 seconds. You can get on the phone lines, though, at 515-605-9345. Hit the number 1. Now we're going to go to Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, you got to just be a little quicker next week. Ryan beat you by 4 seconds.
I know that, Mike, and I assure you that that this will not happen next week.
Ooh, challenge has been thrown down.
I like it. What's on your mind tonight, Kylan?
Well, first off, Mike, I hate to start off the show by calling you somewhat abject pain, but I would like to re-explore something that we discussed last week in the form of my first question, and that is Spike's acquisition of Impact under its former name of TNA Wrestling.
That's okay. We were pretty upset about it last week, but I think we can discuss it again because it's worth discussing.
Okay. In that case, then, question number 1 for you, Mike and Andrew, is if Spike had acquired TNA, since Kevin Kay, the former president of programming at Spike, did have a great relationship with Eric Bischoff, according to him, as well as Eric's reality television producing partner, Jason Hervey. If Spike had acquired TNN and Dixie had relinquished control to them and given the company to Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff to run, as many perceive she did on the wrestling end at least, how do you think they would have fared without the constant control meddling of Dixie Carter?
Well, it certainly would have helped, you know, not having her involved, because we said last week just how pretty much everything she touched turned to garbage when it comes to wrestling. But I think it also would have been a different landscape, too. I mean, if you had a company like Viacom that went in and bought the company and put Eric Bischoff in charge, I'm going to assume that Viacom was going to want to invest in that company a little bit, too. I mean, when they bought Bellator, they had new stage sets, and they were bringing in a lot of new fighters. I mean, they really they had gone not crazy, but they had gone all out in terms of some of the guys that they were signing, and we've now seen Bellator sign some guys away from the UFC. So, yeah, I think that they would have had more of an investment, too. So it would have been a completely different landscape, because not only would they have been able to run the company without Dixie Carter's interference, but who knows what money may have been made available to them to try to sign some bigger-name guys and try to get the company to even a higher level than it was at the time. Andrew, what do you think there? Do you think that I'm assuming that Eric Bischoff would have been the guy running the company. I mean, Kylan's right. Kevin Kaye, Bischoff talked in that interview last week on Busted Open that he had a really good relationship with Kevin Kaye and the people at Spike. So I'm assuming if they were to buy the company, Eric would have been the guy in charge. What do you think that would have looked like without Dixie Carter in the way?
Garrett Bischoff probably would have been world heavyweight champion multiple times. I think they would not have succeeded until those guys were gone. The ratings, I think, went from like a 1.1 to, I think, like around a 0.9 about-ish when that team left of Bischoff and Hogan. They would have had a ton more money. And yes, maybe they could have signed somebody like a Randy Orton, you know, a few WWE guys that could have helped him out, bring some interest. But yeah, I was so down on that era. I mean, like the Nasty Boys came in the very first night. Orlando Jordan beat Samoa Joe. Val Venus beat Christopher Daniels right away. Like, they just didn't like or get any of the TNA originals. So I think Bischoff, I think he's just kind of a one-trick pony, I guess. So I don't think it would have been much better, personally.
What do you think, Colin? Do you think he would have been able to do anything without Dixie in the way?
I don't think it would have been perfect, but my God, anybody probably would have been better than Dixie Carter.
That is true, yes.
Yeah, I think we yelled and screamed a lot about that last week. Yeah, I think pretty much anyone, I think you're right, pretty much anyone could have done a better job running the company than she did. I mean, you take a company that millions of people watched and at one point, from what I understand, was actually turning a profit to a company that was bankrupt and a third of the people were watching it. So,
yeah.
And Andrew did say that TNA didn't start really going down in ratings until after Hogan and Bischoff left. So I think they still had a little bit of fumes left in them. Had Eric Bischoff been placed in charge.
Yeah, no, it definitely. It would have been an interesting scenario for sure.
Okay, now on to real questions here. In regards to Brian Cage, for question number two, as well as undefeated streak in professional wrestling. Is Brian Cage's undefeated streak going to be looked at as more of an Oscar Goldberg level undefeated streak that really matters in, say, 3 to 5 years, or will Brian Cage's undefeated streak be more like former TNA and Impact wrestler Crimson's undefeated streak, where Crimson went undefeated for a year and a half, but Crimson was kind of like the old saying, if a tree falls in the woods and you don't hear it, does it really make a sound?
Yeah, I mean, I hope it's more along the lines of a Goldberg streak and not a Crimson streak. I actually forgot about the Crimson streak. Andrew, did you? I mean, it's kind of funny when you think back that they did the whole undefeated streak gimmick with Crimson. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, that was painful to watch because he was going over like Samoa Joe. And unlike, say, Goldberg, it never, ever, ever caught on. I mean, fans were not buying into it at all. He was, I think, you know, when there was a bunch of like countouts, I think he lost tag matches, maybe, maybe not, but it just, nobody ever bought it. Nobody cared. He wasn't that good. So I will say, it'll be somewhere in the middle because Goldberg's was super popular.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll say it's more like a Ryback type of thing.
Yeah, I would think so too. I don't know if you can get as high as Goldberg. I mean, they're not going to be able to get as high as Goldberg just in terms of overness of this streak, because it's a totally different company that is not going to sell out the Georgia Dome, you know, when Brian Cage finally challenges for the Impact World title. So a notch below that, but I hope it's remembered as a notch above Crimson, just because clearly Crimson's undefeated streak was forgettable because I had forgotten about it.
Yeah, I think pretty much everyone besides me forgot Crimson ever was a wrestler.
Well, he was... Now he's not even in Crimson anymore. He's just part of the Veterans of War, a tag team that we haven't seen in months.
Yeah, hope they're okay.
Well, maybe...
That's because the Veterans of War have been gone from the company for months.
Well, at least they're alive. I mean, poor Rosemary might be dead, according to Josh Matthews and Don Callis. So as long as they're alive...
My next thing on the docket here is on this mystery X Division assailant. Will the mystery X Division assailant be eventually used as a way to extricate Josh Matthews out of his announce position someday, do you think?
I would lean towards no, but I don't know. Andrew, what do you think?
I don't think so.
What do you think is going on with that angle in general?
Yeah, I don't know. They haven't like really focused on that too much. Maybe, I mean, it's got to be somebody new, but I would think. But I don't know who it would be. I'm thinking it's just going to be a new wrestler, but hopefully it's Josh Matthews leaving.
Yeah, I mean, I should reiterate. I'd be fine if it was Josh Matthews leaving. But yeah, I don't know if that. I think it's going to have to be somebody new. Would be my guess. It reminds me. I remember hearing Scott Hall in a lot of interviews in the past. Pitch an idea like this, you know, not to the extent that it's a mystery, but I listened to an interview at one point where I think it was Eric Bischoff who just said over and over and over again, Scott Hall would pitch, you know, what about doing a cruiserweight bully? What about doing he wanted to have like a cruiserweight bully type character mm-hmm. that kind of bullied all the cruiserweights. And they did that. You know what? Impact did an angle like that, though, probably back in the early to mid 2000s with Kevin Nash.
Oh. They also had another wrestler before that named X, who was a big guy trying to destroy the X division around 2003.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
So maybe it's his grand return.
Yeah, who knows? But I don't know where this is going, though. Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
That was Quebecca Pierre. That's right.
Portrayed
X.
My final
question is on the new Sue Young character and angle. Considering the fact that TNA, I mean Impact Wrestling, obviously, likes to somewhat rip off WWE angles and character mannerisms, and they've obviously started doing so with Sue Young having a coffin match soon. Do you think we will eventually see Sue Young doing ridiculous things such as shooting fireballs out of her hands or magically allowing lightning to shoot up from the sky of the impact zone or other similar traits of Undertaker type characters?
I don't think so, only because I don't think that Impact has the budget for a lot of big special effects stuff like that, would be my guess. I wouldn't be surprised if you were to ask somebody in the company, like, hey, would you like to do things like that? The answer might very well be yes. But I just don't think that they've got, you know, they're trying to save money where they can. I don't think they're going to start spending money on big special effects stunts. But maybe I'm wrong. I mean, they spent money on a new set, which I think looks a lot better than the one they were using. So for all these reports that they don't have any money, they must have at least a little bit, because they're investing in some areas of the company for sure. Andrew, what do you think there? Because they've done some things. I mean, but money aside, do you think that they're going to push this in a supernatural way that WWE pushed The Undertaker? Or do you think they're going to make it a little different? Because, I mean, while there's some supernatural tendencies to the angle, it seems different to me. You know, it doesn't feel like a female version of The Undertaker as much as it feels like, it's hard to, I don't even know what a comparable character would be, but just it feels very different with the blood on the dresses and everything else. It feels a little more edgy or a little more hardcore than that.
I could see them doing something like that in their backstage videos, just because they've kind of given up on making those realistic, you know, where they shoot them from like five different angles. And then you could, you know, probably use some special effects, not shoot them live. So it could be cheaper to do. I could see that happening. I think they're still probably trying to figure out what they want to do with this Sue Young character, because I mean, they just had her aligned with Braxton Sutter and that wasn't working. So now they're giving her six henchwomen. So certainly they could take a new approach to it in the future.
Well, that's it for this week, guys. But as I said earlier, I will make you a personal promise that you will hear from me first next week.
Wow. Sounds promise. Good. The challenge has been laid down. I like it. All right, Colin, we'll talk to you next week.
You sure will.
All right. 515-605-9345 is the phone number. We're going to go to another break. When we come back, more of your phone calls here in the PW Torch Livecast.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
All right, back here on the PW Torch livecast. I'm going to have to go back and try to find that segment, too. What were the details of what happened there with that X Division or the mystery X Division attacker? Because I was having – I did miss probably two or three segments, not full segments, but little bits and portions, a couple minutes here and there, with some YouTube TV issues on the show tonight. I had to reboot my YouTube TV a couple times. So there was I was doing it during commercial breaks. So there was a couple of times where the show would come back from a break in the first couple of minutes. I was still probably rebooting my Apple TV. But what exactly happened there? I mean, who was involved?
So it started with Fala Ba and KM talking to each other, and KM's like trying to convince Fala Ba to follow his ways. And apparently Fala Ba can only speak the word Ba, which is troubling. And then they suddenly like, you know, somebody's like, oh my God. And they went to the background, and I think a stagehand was laid out, maybe from what I could tell. And then like a giant red X, piece of paper or something was on their chest.
Okay, they did a similar thing last week, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. And then they cut to Josh Matthews and Don Callis, and Josh was very scared for his health.
Well, of course. I mean, that's what happens. All right, well, we're going to get back to phone calls. Again, 515-605-9345. 626, you're up next on the live cast. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I'm calling from Bakersfield, California.
Hey, Matt, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Gentlemen, I am, like, more positive on Impact than you are. I thought ever since Redemption, I mean, they literally, like, gave me rebirth again. I was so happy and so excited, and I thought last week's episode was okay, but I thought this week's was just great from top to bottom. I mean, I was everything from Grado and Joseph Park, you know, to the KM Fala Ba tag team. I mean, I just enjoyed it.
You know what? That's a good point, though. This was a show tonight where they did kind of spread it around. You had your little bits of comedy. It really was it seemed like a true variety show tonight, because you had some comedy segments, you had some serious segments, you had a really good six man match. The six man match was the match of the night for me. Andrew, what did you kind of think of that mix, just in terms of how they mixed all that together?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I'm with you. I loved Redemption. I thought that's probably the pay-per-view of the year so far for me. Last week's episode was decent. And yeah, I don't know. I think they're setting things up. Whereas I see like Grado and Joseph Park back together, it just feels like a rerun. So hopefully they'll go in new directions with that. But yeah, the show has kind of been lacking on comedy lately. So it seems they want to get back into kind of the what WWE does and mix that around a bit. I wouldn't mind seeing different characters do it, just because I'm not super high on Grado and Joseph Park at the moment.
And is it me, or did Grado go out and get tattoos? I don't remember that. I was looking in the interview, and I was just like, I was just in such an awe of his arm tattoos. I don't know if you noticed that or not.
Yeah, I did notice that. You know what? I don't know if that's – I feel like he had something, but maybe it wasn't as big. I don't know if he had added to it or something. But, yeah, no, it stood out to me too. Andrew, did you notice that at all? I mean, I think he did have some type of tattoo, but I think it may have been bigger tonight. I wonder if he's had it worked on.
Looking at some just images of him online, it looks like he has a big one on his left and right arm. So I don't know if he added more onto it than that, but he definitely has had two big ones going.
Yeah. And one other thing I wanted to bring up tonight was I wish they would pump in the crowd noise. Yeah. Just because, like, I mean, their opening segment, I mean, to me, I thought it was great, and I don't know if you noticed it. There was little kids in the back, and they were chanting out something like, "We don't care, we don't care," at Eli Drake, you know? And I was like, oh, okay, cool. But as other matches went on, you know, like, they just weren't into it. And I remember, like, watching, like, WWF Superstars on the weekends. And, you know, I remember, like, there would be matches like, you know, Duke the Dumpster Drosy versus Kama, the Supreme Fighting Machine. And I remember hearing crowd noise, you know? And I just feel that it would add so much more to the show if they would just can in some noise. And even another spot, too, I noticed was when Sue Young gave that panic switch off the stage. I don't know if it was just my audio or whatnot, but to me, I didn't hear no reaction. Yeah. And I was like, wow, she just put her off the stage. She's burying her, and, you know, there's no booze, no nothing. And I thought that's what really killed the segment for me. I thought it was good, but I give it a little minus just because of crowd participation.
No, I agree with you, and I've been on this for a while. It seems like the sound mixing or something is off. You know, the commentary volume is too high and the in-arena volume is too low. I've noticed, but not only with the crowd, I've noticed especially just with ring noise. You know, you see a guy take a big bump and you don't hear the noise because the in-arena mics are turned down low. And that could be because the in-arena crowd and the impact zone isn't making enough noise and they don't want it to seem too quiet. But like you said, I mean, it's post-production. Yeah. There's ways around that. I mean, you could tell you really can't tell anymore. Well, now, especially because it's live. But back, you know, if I could think of 8 or 9 years ago, having conversations with the people about SmackDown. You know, you'd watch SmackDown on a Thursday or a Friday if it was on Fridays. And you'd hear,
you could clearly hear
where they made sound edits. And like, look, it wasn't always bad. It did add to the element of the show a little bit. So I don't see why they couldn't do something here and just make it a little bit better. Cause I agree with you. It does. It seems way too quiet for me at times. And it kind of feels like it's, I don't know. It's hard to describe, but like you watch a WWE show and granted they're in a big arena with a big crowd, but you listen to the way that it's mic'd and the way that the sound is mixed through the television. It makes it sound like it's in an arena this makes it sometimes seem like it's it just doesn't feel as big, I think, because you don't hear some of those sounds. Andrew, did you pick up on that as well? I mean, I didn't notice, especially the panic switch off the stage, that you didn't really hear much of a reaction there.
Yeah, it does seem like they're having issues miking that place. Around the front, towards the hard crank camera, where the guy who used to always wear the EC3 blazer, now he has other wrestlers on there. Yeah. I feel like I can hear him and like four or five other people in that area, like shouting things throughout the show. It was like, it was like kind of distracting me just because I was like trying to pick up what they were saying. But yeah, so if you can pump in sound and it seems like it's authentic, then yes, I would say go for it. Just as long as they don't go overboard and make it seem like people are going crazy when they're just sitting on their hands. So definitely.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, ideally they want to get in super excited fans all the time, like they had at Redemption, but I still think that's probably going to take a while. So yeah, in the meantime, I don't think it's a bad idea to pump in a little bit of noise.
I'd rather see them, instead of doing it just on the TV, I'd rather see them pump the crowd noise into the building and then just open up the in-building mics a little bit to pick up on that. You know, there's been sports teams that have been accused of doing that. I know some football teams have been accused of pumping in sound through their speakers and stuff like that. But I think that might sound better, because then and it might get some other people excited, too. If you start to hear some noise, whether it's being piped in or not, if you're sitting there and it's a quiet thing, I mean, are you going to want to get up and cheer if everyone else is quiet? Probably not. But if you're hearing some noise around you, it might make it easier for some people to get up and make some noise, some natural noise.
Didn't WWF accuse WCW of piping in the Goldberg chants?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah, I remember that.
I think Bischoff denies it, maybe, but yeah, I went down. They did.
Yeah. I mean, because it also sounded like, even when WWE used Goldberg last year, it definitely sounded like that WWE may have even piped in the chants. Only because the only reason I bring it up is because it sounded exactly the same every time.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. One more thing. I just noticed in my notes, if you don't mind, the Brian Cage match with those three gentlemen from Australia. What did you guys think of that? I mean, I was I was pumped. I'm going to go check out this World Series of Wrestling. Were you guys high on that? Were you guys really, really didn't talk about it much?
Yeah, you know, we're going to go through the show as we go on here. Probably in the next segment, we'll run down the stuff we haven't talked about yet. But I'll say this. I mean, a lot of times they've taken that GWN match of the week, and it's been a throwback match. And it's been, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of kind of a waste of time, because all it's been doing is kind of showcasing that the company felt a lot bigger in prior years. So if you were going to do that and if you were going to use the GWN match as a way to feature some of your partner promotions, then I'm fine with that. And overall, I thought the production quality of that promotion was pretty good. I mean, we've seen some of these matches that they've aired from other promotions that have been dimly lit and hard to air on TV. I mean, a promotion like that, I thought the production value was fine for television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
the ropes, when you know how like some of the ropes look kind of loose, like a little spaghetti-ish.
Tight. We've seen that too.
Yeah, I think it was probably the best. I think it's probably the best looking of those matches, besides the ones where they were in Mexico and they had thousands of people there.
Yeah.
So it's been my, I guess, favorite of those for a while. But I still think for some people it might be a turnoff, just because the Impact Zone looks, you know, pretty good, and you're going the step or two below that. So I would like to see like House of Hardcore footage now that they're partners with them. Maybe Lucha Underground, if that's possible in any way, which probably not. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely on the high end of those, but I would probably vote to not air those on TV.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between doing it from a bigger promotion like House of Hardcore, or they haven't done one from Pro Wrestling NOAH in a while, but we've seen those before in a bigger arena, or AAA that have been from bigger arenas. I think there's a difference between that and, you know, Border City Wrestling in a high school gym, which they've gotten away from. I mean, they haven't done that in a while. So I'd much prefer – I think you need to have a certain set of standards for your show, and I'm talking from a production value standpoint. And this World Series Wrestling from Australia, I mean, I thought the production value for the match tonight was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much, and have a nice evening.
Thanks. Yeah, you too. Thanks for the call. All right. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, let's go to running down the show. We'll kind of hit on the segments. We talked about a lot of them, but Andrew and I will finish up the show talking about some of the segments that we haven't talked about yet. And then we'll get over to the VIP after show, where we will make our predictions and our picks for what is on Sunday? Backlash. I feel like every week we've had something to make picks for lately, the way that they've been running
last,
the shows.
Last three, yeah.
Yeah, so. All right, well, we'll finish up the show after the break, and then we'll head over to the VIP after show and make Backlash picks right after that. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast here on a Thursday.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast. One thing we need to get to before we get to running down the show is we do have an email at impactlivecast@gmail.com, and it's our regular emailer, Tony from New Jersey. And Tony said I butchered his email last week. I know I had to censor it a little bit, but I don't remember butchering it. Anyway, so Tony says, so Brian Cage allows his opponents to do things to him on purpose. Yeah, it's called pro wrestling, Don Callis. What a stupid commentary. He also put the Lucha Underground wrestlers over the Impact wrestlers. He dissed Pop TV's promotion of Point Break. And last week, he said that Toronto was the best wrestling city in all of North America, which aren't even the same damn country unless something changed that I don't know about. And you guys like this dude? What the hell? Tony finishes up by saying, the laziness has got to stop. It's been said before, but pro wrestling, but could pro wrestling writers and promotions be any more lazy with their character switches being between heel and a babyface and continually with their stories? Out of nowhere, Joseph Park is with Grado, and last we knew they were rivals, and Park got him kicked out of America, and now they're buddy-buddy again. And he says, tonight's episode sucked. He gives it a 2 out of 10. I don't know. So I like Don Callis' commentary. And, you know, I think some of that stuff is honestly just him being a little bit of a heel. I mean, that's kind of his role. He's not as obnoxious about it as Josh Matthews was, but he is a heel commentator. I mean, I think you could definitely hear it in the way that he does his commentary, calling Toronto the best pro wrestling city in the world. I mean, that's because he's a Canadian and he's a heel. And he thinks that Canada is better than America. I mean, that's just part of his deal. I'm fine with him dissing the promotion of Point Break because I think it's ridiculous that Pop goes out of their way to promote so much stuff. That Impact goes out of its way to promote so much stuff for Pop TV, and Pop does, you know, hardly anything to promote Impact, and it's a barter deal. So why they feel the need to promote other Pop shows when they're essentially they're not paying for their television time, but they're not getting paid for it. Let's put it that way. I don't see why they need to go out of their way to promote Pop stuff. I think it's ridiculous. And then what else was in there? Oh, he said Toronto was the best city in North America, which isn't even.
It is in North America.
It is in North America. Yeah. Yeah. Unless he said United States of America, I don't know.
Or Northern America? Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. But if he said Toronto's the best wrestling city in North America, well, Toronto is in North America. but yeah, no, I overall agree with his point in the sense that some things from a booking standpoint can get lazy at times. I wasn't as down on the show as he was, though. What do you think of some of the points here? Were you as down on this episode as Tony was? I mean, from talking about it, it doesn't seem like we thought tonight's episode was perfect, but I think I'd give it more than a 2.
I'm probably at like a 5 on this one.
I think that's fair,
Yeah, I think there was a few things that didn't quite click for me. I did not catch the Lucha Underground guys being put over by him. I'll pay more attention to that in the future, kind of how he talks about their talent. Point Break gave me a laugh. To me, it sounded like almost he... Because Josh Matthews was talking about it, and then he said, could you, you know, have a more dated reference? And then Josh is like, it's playing after this. it seemed to me he changed his tune because, like, right after that he said, oh, well, then I can watch it again. Like, he tried to save face with that one, but I don't know why.
You're right, yeah. Which also, this is good because this leads me to believe that they're, and I don't know this for sure, but this leads me to believe that they are doing commentary live as the stuff happens in the ring in Orlando instead of dubbing it week to week, which I'd rather them do. I think that comes off better. Also, there was at one point tonight, and I forget exactly what segment it was in, but again, Josh Matthews, I think it was Josh Matthews this time and not Don Callis, said something to the effect of last Sunday when referring to Redemption. So that's just a slip because obviously they taped all these shows right after Redemption. I'm fine. I'll take little slips like that, which are going to happen. I'll take little slips like that any day of the week if it means you're doing commentary live. I just think it makes for a better product.
Yes, I think so too. I mean, I'm sorry, Tony. I still like him. I'll take him over Sanjay. I'll take him over the Pope, even Don West. And I don't know if I'm missing anybody else. There hasn't been too many, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I still like Don, and you know, maybe he'll win you over someday. Maybe.
All right, let's get to some of the stuff we haven't talked about, and then we'll head over to the VIP after show. Although we've talked about most of these segments. We talked about the opener where Eli Drake set up his world title match against Pentagon Jr. next week. Then they had a backstage segment. Kira Hogan was interviewed by Mackenzie Mitchell. Tessa Blanchard interrupted. Then they went to the first match, and we'll talk about Kira Hogan and Tessa Blanchard in a second here when they have the match with Kira and Taya Valkyrie. But the first match of the night was OVE against KM and Fala Ba. OVE gets the win in 4 minutes. I was not a big fan of this match. I like KM and Fala Ba together. I thought they were a good tag team. Like, they bring good comedy. I think there's a place for them on the show. The crowd loves Fala Ba. Like, I have no reason with those two guys together. I just think that style of match you can do, but don't do it with OVE. OVE has been involved in some real serious, really serious storylines over the last couple of months, and to have them be the, even though they got the win, to have them be involved in the comedy match, I just don't think was a smart booking decision.
No, I 100% with you. I mean, yeah, those guys should not be lying on the ground and being rolled over by two different guys multiple times. This is where their lack of tag teams just hurts them. Keep OVE out of this. Yeah, like you said, they were involved, you know, Sami Callihan was almost beaten to death, basically, so they shouldn't be a part of this at this point in time. But yeah, I mean, I have some hope for Fala Ba and KM. That could be kind of a fun pairing. But God, hire some more tag teams to do this.
They need more tag teams, and it's even at a point now where, you know, do they start to pair up some singles guys and try to make teams just because they might have to, you know? Mm-hmm. I did see one of the things I thought was interesting was on Twitter after the six-man tonight, Andrew Everett talked about what a great team him and DJZ made. So I wonder if they do something with those two guys as a tag team, because he didn't mention Desmond Xavier at all, which I thought was weird. Like, he teamed with one other guy there too, but Andrew Everett put something on Twitter like, wow, hey, what a team me and DJZ make, and that just seemed odd considering it was a six man and they had another guy in there that he didn't mention. But pairing up singles guy, whether it's DJZ and Andrew Everett, I don't really know, it doesn't really matter, take some single guys like that, singles guys that you're not really doing much with, and put them into a tag team just to try to give your tag team division some depth, especially if you give them a reason to be together. I think that's what they're going to have to do.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's way beyond due. I think I would rather see some more tag matches as opposed to random six man tag matches that where they just throw everyone together. I think Andrew Everett would be fine to go back into the tag division. I think DJZ, you know, I would test him out on his own right now due to them focusing on him. Yeah. It's an interesting story. See if he can recapture some of, his popularity or momentum that he had a few years ago. But otherwise, start experimenting with putting some people together.
Taya Valkyrie and Kira Hogan ended in an apparent no contest. They never made an official announcement, but the match ended after Tessa Blanchard hit the ring and attacked Kira Hogan. Kira Hogan and Tessa Blanchard had some interaction earlier when Hogan was being interviewed backstage. Tessa Blanchard interrupted that interview and they exchanged some words. But the match ended here when Kira Hogan hit kind of a modified stomp on Taya Valkyrie on the steps, which took her to the floor on the outside. And then Tessa Blanchard hit the ring and there was a big attack that involved. Tessa beat up Kira, left her laying. All while Taya Valkyrie was on the outside, and that's where we talked about it earlier. Seems like she's being phased out a little bit. But what did you think of this segment overall, and kind of the whole? It was featured in two segments. So going back to the interview and then leading up to the match, what were your thoughts on the, physical debut of Tessa Blanchard? Because we've seen it at the pay per view, we've seen her do some commentary, but we haven't seen her attack an opponent like this up until tonight.
Physically, I thought she looked impressive. On the mic, I thought she was once again pretty rough, which makes me wonder why she's already leapfrogged Taya, who, to me, is the better act.
Yeah, me too.
At the moment. Yeah, so unless Tessa, I'm sure, probably costs less money if they are indeed getting rid of Taya. But yeah, I'm not. I guess that probably just took me out of it. Otherwise, take Taya out of the equation and Tessa just beats up Kira Hogan. Yeah, that was fine.
After that, they went to a commercial and then came back. They aired that Brian Cage match that we already talked about. Then they came the six-man. DJZ, Andrew Everett, and Desmond Xavier beat Phantasma, Drago, and Aerostar. Match of the night for me, I mean, where did this rank? Was this match of the night for you as well?
It was. You're probably higher on it than I am just because I'm probably more burnt out on these random six-man matches. So they always take me a while to get into because I just wonder, what is the point of this? And why isn't there anything at stake? And I don't like just six people all raising hands at the end of a match, especially when one of them looked badly injured.
Yeah, that was true. Yeah, that was Aerostar, correct?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, he did look like he was in some pretty rough shape there. What do you think of them adding the, because they've done this now, I think, two or three times where they've added the Lucha rules to the match, so it's not your typical six-man tag and ends up being, you know, added with the Lucha rules. So if a guy leaves a ring, someone else can come in and be legal. Do you think that changes the dynamic of these matches at all?
I think at the moment, it does kind of make it more fun. Just because, you don't see that in WWE at all. or NXT or anything. So yeah, it's more fun. But to me, I still want to know who these people are. Like Drago has not got any character development whatsoever. Aerostar got a passing mention. Desmond Xavier, we know nothing about. So it's kind of just frustrating to watch. As good as the in-ring athleticism is, I just wish they would take some of that time to tell me who these people are, why they're in the company, and what they want.
After that, Matt, they aired the segment that we had talked about earlier where Austin Aries and Eli Drake had some interaction backstage, either two heels or one guy's turning. We'll see. Then they went to Matt Sydal retaining the X Division title against Taiji Ishimori. Decent match. I mean, I didn't think it was anything special, to be quite honest with you, but it wasn't, you know, terrible either.
Yeah, Ishimori has definitely been in better matches, as Sydal has too, yeah. But yeah, they just didn't click at a high level. So it was a little bit disappointing, I guess, for me.
Tommy Dreamer was then pleading with Eddie Edwards backstage to... I actually thought this was kind of cool because he said that he threw away 3 to 4 years of his life obsessed with beating someone, obviously alluding to Raven in that long ECW storyline. Dreamer was trying to talk sense into Eddie Edwards, but Edwards wasn't really having any of it. He said he was a grown man and that Tommy Dreamer wasn't his father. So we'll see what this is leading to. I don't know if it's leading to Eddie Edwards. I would imagine it's leading to Eddie Edwards versus Sami Callihan again at some point. But you could go in a couple of different directions here. You could also have, you know, Eddie Edwards against Tommy Dreamer as a match as well. I don't know. I think those are the two matches. One of those two is what Eddie's doing at Slammiversary. Either it's Eddie Edwards against Sami Callihan at Slammiversary, or it's Eddie Edwards against Tommy Dreamer, a heel Eddie Edwards turning more than likely and facing Tommy Dreamer at Slammiversary. But I don't know which is which, but it seems like at this point it's clearly going to be one of those two things.
I think so too. And yeah, I thought this was, you know, they didn't overdo it tonight on this angle, but I thought it was pretty solid. I mean, it's keeping me interested in where this is all headed. Yeah, there's definitely different routes they can go. And I kind of like what they're doing with Eddie Edwards right now because he's acting heelish, but he does have some justification, but he's just kind of going about it the wrong way, which I think kind of makes for an interesting character.
Then they went to the main event segment, which we talked about, Su Yung and Rosemary. Do you think it means anything other than just kind of adding to the drama of the storyline tonight that Rosemary was so adamant before the match that Allie not come out, and then Allie, again, after Allie makes a save before Rosemary got put in the coffin, Rosemary was yelling at her to go away and get to the back. Was that just for dramatic effect, do you think, or should we read something into Rosemary not wanting Allie around essentially to help protect her?
I'm probably leaning more towards dramatic effect right now. Or they could try to, you know, turn this into a feud soon, which they may need to, because Allie's going to need more opponents. But it's right now it feels to me like Natalya and Ronda Rousey, just like, hey, we're best friends. Just kind of forcing it on us, rather than letting it play out long term. So I guess I could also see, yeah, them just splitting apart like that. So what do you think?
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Ronda Rousey and Natalya. Natalya turned babyface for no other reason than, oh, she's friends with Ronda Rousey.
Exactly,
that's how that was explained. But yeah, I don't know where they're going to go with that. I mean, I guess they could go with Allie versus Rosemary at some point. That match doesn't particularly excite me. But I don't know what they'll do. I mean, I don't know if Su Yung versus Rosemary needs the title. That's the thing. I mean, you could get away with having two women's matches on the show right now, one with a personal feud and then one that is surrounding the title. So... that's going to be interesting too. You know, do they put the title on Rosemary and then Rosemary and Su Yung feud over it? Do they have Allie feud with someone else for the title? There seems to be a lot of different options that they have there.
Yeah. It seems to me that it's just, they're getting Allie involved because there's nobody really else for her to feud with right now. I mean, Tessa's probably a little too soon. So yeah, nobody else is quite over enough level, especially since, yeah, Sienna was jobbed out. Taya's jobbed out. So it's on them, though.
No, I agree. It is. You're right.
Yeah.
They've done this to themselves, you could argue. All right. Well, I think that does it. That certainly does it for this week's episode of Impact. We've gone through the whole show. But anything else you want to add before we head over to the VIP after show?
No, I don't think so. I'll just plug quick over at pwpodcast.com. I would go there to check out written podcast reviews of all the kind of the biggest wrestling podcasts out there. We got Lillian Garcia and Chris Jericho reviews back up again, so that's pretty cool. Otherwise, if you want to follow me on Twitter, it is @AndrewSouCek.
can follow me on Twitter at MikeMcMahonPW. You can also check out my Impact report at PWTorch.com if you didn't get a chance to watch the show tonight. If you're a VIP member, you're going to hear me and Andrew make our Backlash picks in just a minute. And if you're not a VIP member, well, Wade Keller is going to tell you why you should be in just a couple of seconds. So thanks again, everybody, for your phone calls tonight. Thanks for listening to the show. Andrew and I will talk to you next week at 10 p.m. as soon as Impact goes off the air, unless you are a VIP member. If you're a VIP member, Andrew and I will talk to you in just a couple of seconds when we head over to the VIP after show and give you our Backlash picks and predictions, and we'll review our picks from the greatest Royal Rumble ever in history of mankind that took place last week. So thanks again for listening. Andrew and I will talk to you next Thursday, or we'll talk to you in a couple of minutes, whatever applies. And if you're not a VIP member yet, well, Wade Keller is going to tell you now why you should be.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including the review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
No.